Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, July 28th, 2016. With me today, I have Dave Hamilton. How are you, Dave?
I am stellar. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Glad to hear it, and I'm glad you're here. Also, John Martellaro, I'm really glad you're here. How are you?
Luminous.
Excellent. Stellar, luminous, and just plain awesome. So, hey, we might as well just jump right into everything I want to talk about today. And the first thing that I want to talk about, John, this relates to an editorial you wrote yesterday. So the backstory is there was a point where Steve Jobs talked about how you skate to where the puck is going to be, not where it currently is. And that was a philosophy about how Apple designs their products. They're going where they think we need to be, as opposed to where they see everyone today. And you are now saying that Apple has shifted from skating to where the puck...
Well, not shifted, also.
Oh, so they're doing two things. All right.
Yes.
So in addition to skating to where the puck is going to be, figuratively,
yeah,
they are also now guiding where that puck is going to land.
Right. Isn't that awesome?
So explain that to me, please.
Well, the whole thing started after the earnings report, and I was listening to Tim Cook talk about Apple's situation right now with slightly declining sales in iPads and iPhones and revenues. And to first order, his introductory remarks during the earnings call sounded like blatant salesmanship.
Mm-hmm. That was my take.
That's what we all felt when we were listening to the earnings report. And then I noticed that the stock went up. And of course, the casual first order explanation is Apple did better than expected, but they only did a little better than expected. And so I sat down, put my feet up, closed my eyes, and started thinking about how Apple got a 6% boost, $6 and some, from what would normally be considered
a failure.
Yeah, I was hesitant to use the word because
we're talking about what Wall Street would say.
But yeah. You don't ever want to be in declining sales mode. But considering the problems that Apple faces, considering several elements, you know, the value of the dollar, global headwinds, the changing economy in China, the fact that customers are now faced with paying full price for the phone, they're not being subsidized, that there's no more annual easy check the box $199 upgrade anymore. And so, you know, even though you can get a loan from First Citizens Bank, you know, pay by $30 a month, there's still that awareness that you're buying a $600 phone that you didn't have before. And we've discussed ad nauseum the psychology of the sales of the iPad. And Apple's working on fixing that, but it's taking its time. So I started thinking about why is it that Apple can have declining revenues, declining iPhone sales year over year, declining iPad sales, and have the stock move up as nicely as it did the next day and overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started thinking about what Apple's faced with and how it structures the company, its seasonal product mix, the engineering that it has to go through, the competition, how it has to nurture its products. It's no longer a Steve Jobs company, of one more thing, and it's all exciting. Before, we were wrapped in a nice little, you know, Macintosh world where you could come out with something cool like the Cube. And that was, you know, the sensation. That was the big thing in the whole world. Now, Apple's a very wealthy, large, multinational company, and it has a lot of different products. And these products are subject to local country economics, to economic and competitive pressures, to customer upgrade cycles. And so Apple has to juggle all of this. And so they're in a mode where they're not only investing in R&D for the next big thing, mm-hmm, where the puck's going to be, but they're also in a mode of intelligently nurturing their products and optimizing sales in the light of these pressures, which is what I call guiding the puck.
Okay. So what I'm getting out of what you're saying is that Apple is actively manipulating their business. And I don't mean manipulate in a bad way, but they're manipulating their business to account for factors that they didn't have to deal with on the scale before.
I couldn't have said it better myself. And I gave two examples, and one's the reimagining of the iPad with faster processors and better operating system enablement of the hardware. And the other example I gave was the iPhone SE. Recall there was the phablet mania, and Apple did really well with the iPhone 6 and Apple Pay at the same time. And Apple jumped all over that and had 112% increase in sales in China. And everything went great. And then there were a lot of people who held back. And really liked the smaller phone. So Apple had to kind of come back and make an adjustment there and nurture the product line and kind of fill that in. So Apple is about the business of intelligently guiding the puck, tuning their product lines, meeting the needs of the customers, and as you said, intelligently nurturing in such a way that they can maximize their growth, even when there are strong difficulties facing them. And if they can do that when times are tough, and they can soar when opportunities arise and the economies are great, they're going to do very well. And I think that realization is what hit the investors and the analysts during the earnings report and later. And that's why the stock went up.
So they've accepted a different Apple. That's kind of what I'm hearing here is is Wall Street's finally on board with Tim Cook's Apple.
That's what I'm thinking.
Interesting.
You might be right about that. When I first read your piece, I was like, well, okay, you know, sure. But now that we're talking about it, I actually agree.
Ringing endorsement from my boss.
Of course, I don't agree with everything that you write. With this one, it's not even that I disagreed. It was, well, I've never thought of it this way. So it's going to take me a little while to process, right? Mm-hmm.
While to process it.
Right, exactly. Oh. Yeah. Yeah.
Because there was this cognitive dissonance about what Apple's state of affairs and the stock going up. And you can't account for that by simply saying, just hand waving and saying, well, they did a little better than expectations, so everything's cool.
Right. But even if you want to do your hand waving and say that, we could rewind and say, okay, well, why was Wall Street expecting what they were expecting? And why is this then better? Because you could look at this in a lot of different ways. And in fact, some analysts are, right? Some analysts are saying, well, a lot of this was iPhone SE sales, because they're doing the math and saying, well, the average price, average selling price of the iPhone went down. How could that possibly happen? Well, Occam's razor says more SEs than any other brings the average price down.
Yep. I look at it as glass half full. If the analysts are saying, well, the only reason Apple did so well is because they had this iPhone SE and brought the ASP down. The way I look at it is nurturing the product line, satisfying the customers.
Yep. Yep. Which is another way to say Tim Cook's Apple, because this is not what Steve Jobs did at all.
True.
I don't think we would have seen the iPhone SE if Steve were in charge of Apple.
Well, Steve was responsible for the resuscitation of a company that was dying. And to do that, he had to be bold. He had to be arrogant. He had to be self-confident. And he had to come out with blockbuster products that surprised us and delighted us.
But I also
that's Apple back on its footing.
It is, but that's who he is. I don't think he would have changed if he were here at Apple. Let me rewind that. I don't think he would have changed that aspect of himself if he were still at Apple.
Brings up an interesting question. Would Apple
it does, but it's irrelevant.
Be better served by having Tim Cook now in their maturity phase?
We're only beginning to see that, right? You know, right. We can't I think it's almost too early to answer that question. But you know, and of course, I'm saying this as someone who absolutely thoroughly loves the existence of an iPhone SE, and even more so, I love the existence of it in my pocket. And I really hope that we don't lose that size device in the fall with new iPhones coming out. And I fear that we will, but maybe
I hope not, because it's. And yes, I know that it wasn't that long ago that I was saying, oh, geez, Apple doesn't need three size iPhones. We don't want another Samsung on our hands. But now that it's out and I've seen the response to it, I'm thinking it's really a good product to keep around. Mm-hmm. And Dave, especially based on your reaction to the iPhone SE.
Well, yeah, I'm a geek. I'm a power user. I need is, you know, absolutely a word I say tongue in cheek, to have the latest tech, right?
Mm-hmm.
I need to have the fastest iPhone available. So, you know, and that's what brought me away from the 5S to the 6S Plus. It was like, well, all right, if I'm going to have to go bigger, I might as well go all the way. But not to tangentialize this here, John. I'm with you, and this is it's interesting. And you know, it's Apple doesn't exist in a bubble, you know, either. They're not an island. There are lots and lots of other companies, including lots and lots of other tech companies, and the analysts are aware of the shifts in the market now too. Mm-hmm. You know, this. The whole industry that Apple is in is maturing. And so, you know, Apple's being, that's being acknowledged by Wall Street as well. I think that's a part of it.
There's nothing wrong with fine-tuning your product line and your company while investing big bucks in R&D for the next big thing. You can do both.
Of course.
And yeah, I've seen articles where people actually condemned Tim Cook for being a poor successor to Steve Jobs because he doesn't come out with these blockbuster surprises, and because certain products are not soaring and rising revenues forever and ever. There's no such thing as rectilinear growth all the time, forever. There will be bumps. How you manage those bumps is what's important, and that's what Tim Cook is doing, and that's why in the article I had this sub theme of the master juggler.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to keep a lot of balls in the air these days, and Tim Cook seems to be doing a good job, I think.
So, John, one of the things that I'm picking up from what you're saying plays into something that you have discussed with me in the past, which is the notion that you need different leaders for different phases.
Yes.
And so Apple needed Steve Jobs to be the leader when the company needed to be revived.
Right.
And we have maybe moved past the phase where Steve Jobs was the necessary leader, and regardless of the fact that he had to step down, and that it became Tim Cook's time, and Apple needed a different type of leadership because they were entering a different phase for the business.
I think that's why Steve chose Tim Cook, because he watched him for several years managing the production, the supply chain, the warehousing, the inventory. He saw Tim Cook's masterful juggling of all those essential components to bring everything together at the right time and to get the right product in the right place at the right time. And he realized that that's what he was going to be needing after he had resuscitated the company. So I think he saw that value in Tim Cook. What we don't need right now is somebody who looks at things simply and is a, you know, showman. We need somebody who manages all these complexities. And I think the earnings report that we just saw on Tuesday was a demonstration of Tim Cook's ability to take a somewhat bad situation and demonstrate that you should have great confidence in the management ability of the company and their ability to meet these challenges. And that's why the stock went up.
All right. Well, I want to hit a second topic, so I'm going to wrap this up now.
I apologize for my sore throat.
That's all right. You just need to stop licking cats. Hairballs will do this to you. Anyhow, if you want to have or hear a more in-depth discussion about how Wall Street reacts to stocks and earnings reports. Bran Chaffin and I had a really good discussion on yesterday's Apple Context Machine, and I'll make sure there's a link in today's show notes so you can go back and check out Apple Context Machine from yesterday and get all that technical information. And we talk about a lot of other things too. It's actually a fun show. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about today is this patent application that has just been published for, it's an Apple patent application. And what it describes is a digital crown. So like the digital crown on an Apple Watch, but on an iPhone or an iPad. And it's performing similar type functions that you would see on an Apple Watch. So you can scroll through stuff. You can use it to wake up the screen. The patent talks about using it as the shutter switch for the camera and selecting text and making it larger and doing various tasks. And when I looked at this patent, my first thought was, this is ridiculous. and as I read through more of it, I have changed my feeling about this. It's still absolutely ridiculous, but it's ridiculous tempered with, this was something that I feel was necessary for Apple to do. They need to protect the idea of the digital crown in the way that they're using it. And I think that this is a patent not to telegraph what's coming down the road for the iPhone and the iPad, but instead to make sure that the things that people might want to do with a digital crown on competing products, they're not going to be able to do.
It's called a blocking patent.
Yeah, they you know, the thing is, right now, Apple has a patent on the digital crown on a smartwatch.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But, you know, if I asked you to really tell me the difference between a smartwatch and a smartphone, like legally, right? Sit down and tell me something that, you know, any court worth their salt would agree with. It's going to be a pretty short list of things.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, because wearing it on your wrist, well, I mean, you could have a phone on your wrist. In fact, they exist. So
sure. And you can also get cases that let you wear your phone on your wrist.
That's true. Right. So yeah. So this is a very fine line. And I think it very quickly is going to erode. We as users will pick devices that are smaller for our wrists and perhaps a little larger for our pockets. But as the capabilities of those devices and, you know, as battery life and CPU power and, you know, memory and all of that sort of converge, and the watch gets closer and closer to that which the phone has. And if you think that's not going to happen, I just want to point out the fact that, you know, my phone that's in my pocket is what? 4,000 times faster than my first computer. 4,000 times. So they didn't converge, it surpassed it, right?
And it's right. Probably at least 50 times faster than the original Crave at Apple bought.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. So they need to have enough intellectual property out there that protects this concept of the digital crown regardless of how people use it. And so, yes, John, that's a very long-winded way of me saying it's a blocking patent.
Right. And if you think about it, my first reaction was, it's a great idea for Apple to protect this patent. It's a nice thing, and you don't want other people just sort of saying, well, you know, you didn't put it on your phone, so we're going to be innovative and original and put it on our phones.
Right.
Because your patent applies to the watch. But when you think about why Apple hasn't done that, think about the human factors and the interference with a case and the possibility of breaking off and what would happen to it in a fall, and Apple's drive towards having fewer and fewer external ports and so on. It just doesn't seem to fit in with the
on a device
phone. So
on a device with a screen that size,
right? So
you don't need a. Everything Jeff described was ridiculous.
Even though Apple's doing a blocking patent, my reaction was no. Even if Apple thought about doing this, there would be too many negatives.
Right.
We're not going to see it.
Yeah, we're not going to see it. All right. Well, it's nice to have validation from you guys on that, because I just looked at this and it's an absolutely ridiculous patent, but it totally makes sense from a legal standpoint.
Yep.
Hey, on that note, we are out of time, so we have to wrap up. John, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome.
And Dave, thank you for being here as well.
You are welcome. It's my pleasure.
And it's always great to have both of you on. Listeners, I'm so glad you were here to join us again today. So thank you for being here. We'll see everyone again tomorrow.